All right, everybody got your exam? The average is 77.6, so that's about where it should be. Gives you an idea of where you stand. Like I said before, the answer key is in D2L, and it should be pretty complete. If you go through the answer key and you still don't understand why you got something wrong, you can bring that to me during my office hours, or you can post about it on the discussion boards, and we'll get it resolved that way. So, typically in this course, you need to get a 70% overall in order to get a C in this course at the end of the semester, but that's including your lab scores and your homework scores and other things that tend to bring your grade up. So typically what we've found is that if you're doing well in your labs and if you're doing all your homework like you're supposed to, then a student that gets above 60 or so on the exams will be able to get a C in the class. So keep that in mind. But if you're not doing your homework or you're not turning in lab reports or something like that, that number will change. So if you got... I would say if you got in the 60s or lower than the 60s, it would probably be a good idea to come and talk to me at some point during my office hours, so sometime before class usually. Just for us to go over maybe what you could do differently in your studying. If you thought you studied hard and thought you did the right thing but didn't do well on the exam, then you should really come and talk to me and we'll be able to work out some different studying strategies for you so you can be a little more prepared for the second. Okay? Everybody see the score sheet stapled in on the second page? Yeah. So, the blank version, use that to quiz yourself. The idea is to learn from the mistakes that you made on this first exam, so if something like that came up in the future, you'd be able to do it correctly. All the stuff from chapters 1 through 3 will be things that we'll be continuing to use throughout this course. So if there was something you got stuck on in that material, it's very important that you learn it, otherwise you'll have trouble keeping up with the stuff which we'll be doing in the future. So we have a chapter 4, Mastering Chemistry, due this Friday. So that means after today's class, you should be able to get a start on most of the questions on there. So at least the first half of them or something. So tonight or tomorrow or something like that, be working on that assignment. This is not one to save until Thursday night. So make sure you can get a good start on it so you'll be able to finish it. Lab report due dates, the lab we did last week will be due next Monday because we'll be talking about writing reactions and stuff in class this week. Okay? So, any questions? All right. Make sure you go through your exam carefully with the answer key just to make sure everything makes sense to you, though. Do that on your own. All right. We ended last time talking about the unit of molarity as a unit of concentration and how we can use molarity as a conversion factor. Okay. So, what two units does molarity convert between? Moles and liters. Right? Moles of the thing that we've dissolved and liters of the solution that we've made out of that. Those are the two things that can be converted between. So, here's this question. How do you prepare 250 milliliters of a 0.10 molar silver nitrate solution? Use the given molarity as a conversion factor. So 0.10 molar, right here, means 0.10 moles per liter. When we set up a conversion factor, on one side we have 0.10 moles of silver nitrate, the stuff that we've dissolved, per 1 liter of solution. Okay? Moles, 0.1 moles per liter means 0.1 moles are within 1 liter of that solution. That's what moles per liter means. Okay? So that means this question will be a matter of converting units. Okay? What will we start with on this one if it's just a unit conversion? Yeah, let's start with 250 milliliters. When we're doing unit conversions, we should probably not start with capital M, Why not? What will I use the molarity as instead? Yeah, we'll use that as a conversion factor, fraction to convert those two units. So, I'll get you started. And I'll give you a hint here. 250 milliliters of solution. Okay. What should I convert milliliters into? Liters? Sure. How many milliliters in a liter? 10. Then what can I convert liters into? Go ahead and do that. I can convert liters into moles, just like you said here. And you can fill that in, but let me ask you a question before we're finished with this calculation here. The question I asked was, how do you prepare 250 milliliters? Does an answer in moles tell us how to prepare a solution? No. What do you suppose I need to do? There's actually one more step that we have to do here.
Grams.
Grams of a solid like silver nitrate are something that we can actually measure out in the lab. Okay? So once you're in moles, let's just add to another line here. And so you don't have to look it up, I'll give you the molar mass, 169.88 grams of silver nitrate. Give me a second to punch it in. This conversion factor right here, where we got into moles of silver nitrate, what did you put for how many moles of AgNO3? Anyone?
0.10
moles of AgNO3 per what?
1 liter.
1 liter. Okay. There's that. Get an answer rounded to how many significant figures?
Two.
What'd you get?
4.2.
Okay. We'll talk about that 4.2 in just a second. But I want to just come back to this one right here. It's very important you know the difference between moles and molarity. Okay? Moles are just a count of how many particles there are, essentially. Okay? It's like dozens of eggs. So it's a precise amount of how much of something that there is. Okay? How is moles different from molarity? What is molarity a measure of? Yeah, moles per liter, which is a what?
Concentration.
Is it concentration? Okay, so, and the moles and the big M, I think, is what gets students confused. If it were just grams and then grams per liter, nobody would be confused about it. Everybody understands the difference between grams and grams themselves and grams per liter. Okay? I could have something that was 500 grams per liter, but it doesn't actually contain 500 grams if I have just a tiny little bit of it. Right? So, the capital M is always used as a unit, right? Like given in the problem, right here. 0.10 molar. Okay? That capital M gets substituted for moles per liter. And if we use it in a fraction, it's that number of moles per 1 liter. It's a very common mistake for a student to write 0.10 capital M, AgNO3, on the top of a fraction. But there's nothing that cancels a capital M in a unit conversion problem. Okay? You have to be in from liters into moles, and then you can take moles on to grams or whatever it is. You need to calculate from there. Okay? So very important that you know that difference. I will not have a lot of mercy on exams or something if there's a capital M written instead of moles. It's very important that, let's put that in red. Okay. The M itself is here. The M means this whole thing. Moles is just a part of moles per liter. Okay. So, let's go on to our answer. 4.2 grams of silver nitrate. So, I measure out 4.2 grams of silver nitrate. We can all do that. Then do I just automatically have the solution that I asked for? I have to do a little bit, I have to do something else that involves that volumetric flask. Right? So, anybody know what the first thing I should do would be? Well, first thing would be measure out 4.2 grams of silver nitrate. Okay? Then what? What do you think?
And then you could add
a little. Okay, so I've got my 4.2 grams on a little plastic weighing boat. Do I put the water in? Okay. I need to speak precisely in science. Pretend that I'm an idiot and I don't know what's going on. Tell me every little thing to do, right? If I'm asking you to describe the process on an exam or something like that, you need to don't assume that I know that you'll be measuring the 4 grams into here or whatever, right? So first, put 4.2 grams. Move that guy in there. Okay. Then what?
250 milliliters of water.
Add 250 milliliters of water.
Or add up to water.
All right. This volumetric flask has a line on the neck of it, right there. So, and there are different size volumetric flasks, right? I'm going to pick the volumetric flask that has a 250 milliliter capacity. Okay? It'll have 250 written on the side of it here. So that means a solution where the bottom of the meniscus is filled to that line will be 250 milliliters of solution itself. Okay? So usually the best way to do that is to put water in there, you know, about halfway, and then swirl it around to get it all dissolved first. If you just had the solid and you just put water up to the line, there's going to be air trapped in there, and as it dissolves, that volume will actually change. So it's good to dissolve it first. Okay. Add water to dissolve. Then, water to the line to make 250 milliliters of solution. Okay. So, what would happen if I put my silver nitrate in there first and I measured out 250 milliliters of water in a graduated cylinder or something like that and poured that in? Yeah, you'd have more than 250 milliliters of solution. Okay? Dissolved solids, even though they dissolve and it looks like they've gone away, they're still taking up volume. So that volume has to be compensated for, but we don't ever have to worry about exactly how much water to add because all we're doing is adding enough water to make 250 milliliters of solution itself. Okay? So pretty much always when we're preparing a solution, it'll be in terms of how much of the solution itself we need to make, not in terms of how much water needs to be added. Okay? Does that make sense? So let's take what we learned from there and do a couple of calculations involving concentrations. So, first of all, here's one that asks, what is the molar concentration of the solution? Molar concentration is the same thing as molarity. Molar concentration equals what per what? In this case, moles of what?
C, copper, chloride, 2.
Per liters of what?
Solution.
Not liters of water, but liters of solution. Okay? So, I have given you 7.5 grams, and I've given you 500 milliliters of solution. So what do we need to do before I put it in that fraction? I need to get the units right. Okay? So let's let you work on this for a little bit. Two groups of three, group of four. You can
group of four, people up there, then a group of four here.
Okay? So work on this one. Get the units correct first. And then do what molarity equals, moles per liter. So, just 1 minute. And
molar mass of copper cubed oil.
All right, first of all, over here, Nate, you told me the molar mass, right? Say it again, nice and loud. 134.45. Okay, is that what everybody got? Yeah? Okay. So, grams cancels. Over there, what do you guys get for moles? 0.055783 mils. That work? Okay. Down in front here, what do you guys do with milliliters?
1,000 milliliters.
That's right. 1 liter, 1,000 milliliters, which is how many liters? Quick five. Okay. Finally, molarity equals these two over the right point. 0.55783 moles per 0.5000 liters of solution. In the back, what'd you guys get?
0.11.
And you did two significant figures?
Yep.
0.11, what? Capital M. 0.11, and how do you pronounce that? 0.11? Molar. Okay?
Hunter Jess, can you put those two steps together? And then, like, start out with a concentration of 0.5 grams per 500 milliliters, and then change the.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If you wanted to get moles per liter, you could have 7.5 per 500, and then you would need to have 1,000 on top in order to cancel the milliliters on the bottom. Yep. So if you want to start out with two units and just make sure you're careful with the canceling, that'll work the same. Okay. Try this one. Same. This is pretty similar to the last page, sort of going in the reverse though. What's the name of K2CO3? Potassium carbonate. They call it K-carb in the lab. So which number did you write down first? 1, 2, 5? But 241? Only one of those can start a string of conversions. One of them is used as a conversion factor. What is the molar mass of potassium carbonate? Somebody get that? Say that a little louder, Vanessa. 241 or put 125? 241. Grams is just one unit. It's, if possible, start out a conversion problem with just the single unit, the one that's not associated with anything else. This big M is not just one unit. It's actually what? What per what? Moles per liter, okay? So let's start at 0.241 grams. Potassium carbonate, I was told its molar mass was 138.21. All right. Stick with you folks in front here. What'd you put on the bottom of the conversion factor after you got grams into moles?
On the bottom of the next one?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
0.125.
Okay. One liter of what? Solution. You can do SOL apostrophe N or something like that. But yeah, all of that came from 0.125 molar. Make that whole thing. Okay. I asked for milliliters, so I think we can all do that. Times 1,000. Okay. Looks good. Got some fret, get an answer? 1.7, how many? 7.4? Anybody else get that? Yeah? You guys get that over? It's good to me. The key is, yeah?
Can you do it the other way? Will it turn out the same? Is it just more difficult?
If you started with the M? If you started with the M, I think if you started with the M on top, your whole thing would be inverted, right? In order to get a milliliter unit, you need to have these moles down the bottom of the fraction. So, I mean, you'd probably figure it out. I mean, if you did something like liter. What's that? Yeah.
All of us have got like
13.9. That's what I got.
Yeah. Well, say something then. For God's sake. What'd you get?
13.9 milliliters.
Okay. I said, did anybody else get that?
Well, we all scrambled for our calculators.
Yeah,
so
why don't you try it again? Okay.
We were a little bit
behind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I got, but I don't make any assumptions that I've typed in the right thing either. So. All right. Fair enough. But you're asking what would happen if you tried to do the 0.125 moles per liter. You'd have to do 1 liter, milliliters, mole, 138.21 grams. 241 grams is what we started with, so you could sort of do it, but you're going to get milliliters on the bottom, which would mean you're going to get the reciprocal of that answer. So it'll work, but you'd have to do 1 divided by. All right. Other questions? Are we all happy with this answer? No?
Yeah.
You guys see what you did? Okay.
Yeah, I forgot to put something
in. Got it. All right. So that was preparing a solution. That was using a solution that you're already given to figure out how much is in that solution or finding the concentration of a solution, something like that. Dilution is a different process. Dilution, you can always recognize a dilution when you have one solution that's becoming a solution of a different concentration. Okay? So your problem will have two concentrations of the same solution, okay? On some level. So strictly to dilute something, we take a solution and we add solvent to it to change its concentration. Okay? We make it more dilute. So if you ever use a concentrated floor cleaner or something like that, you take one capful of it and pour it in a bucket of water to make it more dilute. So as you increase, here we go, when adding water to a solution, what happens to the number of moles of solute? Stays the same. If we add water, we haven't changed any moles of the stuff that's dissolved. We've just changed how much water it's dissolved in. Right? Since that's constant, remember, molarity is what per what?
Moles
of solute per liter solution. Okay. If I do a little algebra, do my little twirly arrow there, and solve for moles of solute. What's our algebra? Moles of solute equals what? What's this capital M? Molarity, right? Translator is solution. Okay? So, if moles stays constant, we can change these things. Okay? But let's say I increased the volume of the solution. If I increase the liters of solution, what happens to the molarity in order to keep moles constant?
It goes down.
Okay? Let's say I purposely wanted to make a more concentrated solution. What would I have to do with the volume? Yeah. If I wanted to make a solution more concentrated, I'd have to let some of the water evaporate or something like that. Okay? So, anybody know what that relationship is called between these two variables, where one goes up, the other has to go down? Starts with an I, not independent, though. Inversely, yeah. Okay? Where, in essence, one goes down, the other goes up, and so on. Because of that, we cannot use those two as a conversion factor. Conversion factors only work when things are directly proportional to each other. So, we do have an equation, though. Since before a dilution and after a dilution, moles stay the same, okay, we can set these two times each other and have that be equal. Right? M1V1 equals M2V2, where the number 1s were before dilution, the 2s are after dilution. Okay? Anytime we have two things that are inversely proportional like that, we can have two things multiplied on each side of the fraction indicating two different periods of time. Okay? So, concentration and volume before we dilute equals concentration times volume after we've diluted. And the reason we can do that is because what stays constant throughout the dilution? Moles. The number of things we've dissolved, the number of molecules that we've dissolved, does not change. Okay? If I make more volume, that increases the number on the bottom of the fraction here, and that makes molarity smaller. Okay? If I concentrated it down, if I boiled water off or let it evaporate, that would make this number smaller, and that would make the molarity larger, because this one was on the bottom of the fraction. Okay? So, that's the dilution equation. Anytime that you can identify a dilution is happening, this is the equation that we use. Okay? And typically, a problem will contain 3 out of the 4 variables. So we need to just rearrange the dilution equation to solve for the 4th one that we don't know. Okay? So here's a question. I have 3 numbers. Okay? Either 2 will be concentrations and 1 will be volume, or 2 will be volumes and 1 will be a concentration. 2 will be the same, 1 will be different. Okay? That's the way it has to be if I have variables like that. What I would like you to do is, first of all, of these 3 values, figure out which variables they correspond with. Ask yourself, is this a concentration or is it a volume? Ask yourself, was this before the dilution or was it after the dilution? Okay. 9 times out of 10, the mistakes that a student will make on this problem come from misassigning whether it was before or after, or whether it was a concentration or a volume. So, but it's not tremendously difficult. Just look at the unit. If it's liters or milliliters or something like that, we know those are volumes. Okay. Molarity is the unit of concentration we've been using. So, first of all, assign those variables. Need my red here. You ladies in the back over there to my left, did you figure out what the 18.0 is? M2, concentrated sulfuric acid. How do you make 10 liters of 1.50 molar by dilution? Let's think about it this way. If I want to make 10 liters of 1.50 molar, is this right here, is this happening before or after the dilution? Yeah, This right here is happening after the dilution. Read it carefully. How do you make 10 liters of 1.50 molar? That's what I want to have. Okay? I'm asking how you make it. So, if that's the case, I'm telling you concentrated sulfuric acid is 18 molar. Is that what I have before or after the dilution? Before? Okay. So if this is before the dilution, which variable is this going to be? What do you think? Yeah. Anyway, any of you three back there? Ashley, Amanda, Hansen. What do you think? M what? M1. There we go. Everybody get that this one is M1? Okay. So, 10.0 liters over here. Stephen, what do you think? V2. 1.50 molar. Let's stick with you guys. What do you think, Ashley?
M2,
which means we need to solve for what? What's missing? V1. Okay. If I have M1 V1 equals M2 V2, what do I have to do to both sides to get V1 by itself? Let's do a little algebra. If I want V1 alone by itself down here in front, Megan or Tyler, divide both sides by what? M1. Okay. What happens on the left side of this fraction then? Or on the left side of this equation, what happens? Over here. M1 cancels. So V1 equals M2 V2 over M1. M2 was 1.50 molar. V2, 10.0 liters. M1 okay. Did you get an answer? Hudson, Tyler, what'd you get? 0.833 liters of what? Got a lot of stuff up there. 0.833 liters of what? Yeah, of the concentrated sulfuric acid. Okay? We assigned M1, okay, because that's what we have before. V1 will be of that same stuff, but what volume? So, these problems are as much reading comprehension as they are math or algebra. Okay? So, practice reading this question and being able to identify what you had before, so what you're collecting together, what you have, and then what you have after the dilution. So the thing that you want to make is what you get after the dilution has been done. So whenever it's a how do you make or say you need or something like that, that's talking about what has happened after the dilution. Okay? So I know it seems silly, simple right now probably, but honestly, I see so many mistakes on the exam for people that are flipping the before and after and stuff like that. So just slow down a little bit. Think about it carefully. I have a picture here. What do you suppose I need that for? By the way, what was that called again? That's a volumetric flask. Just call it a vol flask for short. What size volumetric flask will I need for this problem? I need a 10 liter volumetric flask. Why not a 0.833 liter volumetric flask?
That's our starting.
Yeah, that's what you're starting with. You're going to do a dilution to make a bigger volume. Okay. Why not a 1.50 molar volumetric flask? Because that doesn't make sense. Okay. So, good. 0.833 liters of concentrated sulfuric acid. Okay. I can measure out 0.833 liters with a pipette or a graduated cylinder or something like that. What will I do with that 0.833 liters? I'll put it in the volumetric flask. Then what? I'll add water until we've reached the line. Okay? Now, technically, since it's concentrated sulfuric acid, you should really put some water down in that flask first and then add the sulfuric acid. You're supposed to keep the concentration low. So if I had that concentrated sulfuric acid and I put water in it, it would get very hot and it would spatter and stuff like that. So keep the concentration low. Right? Start with water. Add the sulfuric acid to it a little bit at a time, but that's just down in the bottom there. Okay? The last thing you'll do still is what?
Add water
up to the line.
Add water up to the line. Okay. That goes in here first.
It's a different color. Okay. So before dilution, I have that much. After dilution, I have this much. What happened to the concentration in the dilution process? Yeah. As volume increases, concentration decreases. Okay? That's an important thing to keep track of. You will be able to check yourself. Okay? If you're not quite sure whether you picked the right stuff before or after, ask yourself what we just said there. My volume is increasing. Does my concentration decrease like it should? If you flipped one of these things around, you would have got it would go the wrong way. Okay? So that's dilution. And remember I said dilution problems are easy to spot because there are three numbers in them. Two of the same unit, one has another unit. Oh, I forgot to show you units here. What interesting thing happens to the units in our calculation here? What happens? Molarity cancels. So that means that the units of concentration didn't necessarily have to be molarity. There are lots of different concentration units. There's ppm and grams per liter and all kinds of stuff like that. So the units don't have to be any one thing, but the two concentrations I have in the problem have to what? Have to have the same unit. Okay? So that means volume does not need to be liters, but the two volumes in the problem need to what? Have the same unit. Okay? So we could have done milliliters or cubic centimeters or nanoliters or whatever, but make sure your units are appropriate based on what's canceling. Okay. That's all we need to say there. All right. Let's combine these concentration calculations with the stuff we talked about at the start of the chapter using a chemical equation, right? Reactants go into products. Okay. One more reminder. Molarity converts between what two things? Moles of solute and what? Liters of solution. Okay? So, moles of something that's been dissolved, if we have a molarity, we can figure out what volume of that solution it would be. If I have a volume of a solution, I can use a molarity to figure out how many moles of solute have been dissolved in it. Okay? Capital M is our conversion factor between those. Okay? So, molarities can be used in stoichiometry problems. Remember, that's what we started with, talking about amounts of a reactant, making amounts of a product, or how much this reactant reacts with how much of that. Yeah, whatever. Okay? We can use molarities along with the mole ratio, okay, in a balanced chemical equation. So here's our question. How many grams of lead-2-iodide? Which one of these is lead-2-iodide? You can find that, right? Right here, PbI2. How many grams of lead-2-iodide? So that's our question. I have to put a little question mark there to keep track of it. Can be formed by mixing 1 milliliter of 0.5 molar lead to nitrate solution with 2 milliliters. Call it 1.0. There we go, 2.0 milliliters of 0.30 molar sodium iodide. Okay. So, the setup of this one looks a bit like what we've done before, but I've given you amounts of 2 reactants. Yeah? I've given you amounts of 2 reactants, and I'm asking about a product. What special consideration, what special thing did we have to do when I gave you amounts of 2 reactants? Yeah. This is going to be a limiting reactant problem. Okay. I'll get you started, and then I'll let you work. So, with limiting reactant, we do separate calculations for each of the reactants. Okay? So, if I started with the lead, right, this lead to nitrate, which of these two numbers would I start with in a conversion? 1.0 milliliter. And let's be careful that we show the substance, too. Okay. Milliliters into liters. Liters into liters can be converted into moles. That's the start I'll give you. Sure. There is one molar mass you need. I'll give it to you. Just to save a little time here.
So how do we do that before? To determine which is the limiting reactant, what units did I convert everything into? Moles? And in this case, we'll want everything in moles of what? Which substance? Yeah, moles of that product. So we'll have 2 calculations that both end with moles of the product.
So it's looking like, for the most part, we've got the first couple of steps here. We all got into liters fine. We all said 1 liter per 0.50 moles of PbNO32. But what did I say we needed moles of to figure out limiting reactant? Yeah, we needed moles of the product. So going from moles of this lead nitrate, how am I going to get from lead nitrate to lead iodide? Mole ratio? What kind of mole ratio in this case? 1 to 1? So easy in this one. Is it always a 1 to 1 mole ratio going from one thing to another thing?
No.
No? How do we know what the mole ratio is? Yeah, coefficients. Okay. If we assume this was properly balanced, which I think it is, 1 mole of lead nitrate makes 1 mole of lead iodide. Okay. So it seems silly like that, but if you leave out a 1 to 1 mole ratio on this one, you're just as likely to leave out a 1 to 2 mole ratio where it really counts, and then you're going to get the problem wrong. Okay. So 1 to 1 mole ratio. What'd you get? 5 times 10 to the minus 4? About right for the first one? Okay. Second one, 2 milliliters of sodium iodide. 1 liter to 1,000 milliliters. How many moles on top of this next one? 0.30 moles per what? Mole ratio. Right. Coefficient 2, right there. And I'm pretty sure if you left out that mole ratio, you would get the entirely wrong answer for this problem, I think. Because what'd you get for the answer for this one, moles of PbI2? What did you get an answer for this one? I have to point at somebody, don't I? In the back, what'd you guys get? For moles in the second one from NAI. 6 times 10 to the negative 4? Did you divide by 2? Yeah. Okay. I have moles of 2 different numbers of moles for the same product. How many moles of product can actually be formed? 3 or 5?
3.
Right? 3 times 10 to the minus 4. We can't make 5 because what happens before I can get to that 5? Yeah, NAI is the limiting reactant. It runs out first. That's how many moles a product can be formed. I didn't ask about moles, I asked about grams. What do I need to get from moles into grams? Molar mass, which I gave you. So I got 0.14. Is that what you guys got?
Yep.
That's the actual answer. So maybe I should put a box on that one. Let's just see what that goes to the next part. Okay. So, doing a problem like this proves to us that you cannot get through this class just by memorizing how to do one particular type of product. Okay? If you understand the concept of limiting reactant,
Okay. You would understand that you need to figure out how many moles of that one product could be formed from all the things that you were given. Okay? And no matter how you want to get, no matter how you can get there, right? Sometimes you start with grams, sometimes you might start with milliliters of a solution, sometimes you may have grams for one and milliliters for another. Okay? You're always getting to moles of that product. We only keep the value of moles that is what? Smallest, okay? Because that's when the first reactant will run out, and then we can convert those moles into whatever it is that we're asking about. Okay? If I had a... Oh, think about this one. Think about this. You could get moles in that last one. What if I told you the total volume of the solution when you're finished? What could you calculate about that product? If you have moles and you have total volume. Molarity. I could ask you, what is the molar concentration? What is the molarity of the product? Okay. So try to resist the temptation of memorizing this, then this, then this, then this. Think of it rather in terms of what's happening, what points you need to get to, and then use the unit conversion stuff that I've been hammering down your heads this whole time in order to get there. The idea, the reason I do so much of this canceling units is because that can just end up being a tool to get us from where we started to where we need to go without having to memorize what sequence of steps we need to get to in between. Okay? So that's a very powerful skill to be able to have. So make sure in your practicing that you're choosing, right, problems in the textbook and so on that have a variety of different things you're given, a variety of things that's being asked for, so you can be sure that your mind is flexible enough to be able to do that. Okay? Any questions about this? All right. Since we're on the topic of solutions, that's what this chapter is about, let's define electrolytes and non-electrolytes. Anybody that drinks a sports drink or something like that, you hear all about your electrolytes and the balance of your electrolytes and so on. It's the actual definition of it, though. An electrolyte is a solute that causes a solution to conduct electricity. Okay? So nobody's really interested in your sports beverage conducting electricity, but it's a property that we'll talk about. If it contains electrolytes, it can conduct electricity. Okay? A non-electrolyte is a solute that does not cause the solution to conduct electricity. That's some lovely grammar. Okay? So I've got a setup here which we'll use to demonstrate a little bit of it, but this is a pretty decent example of what will happen here. Salt, and use a little bit of your common sense here. Okay? If I had, actually, before I even do that, let's plug the thing in and let's see. I'll have you predict and then we'll actually investigate. So the setup, though, it shows there, is taking a power source with electrodes in the solution hooked up to a light bulb. Okay? So if you have a solution that conducts electricity and you get it all hooked up, what will that light bulb do? Yeah, it'll light up. If you have a solution that does not conduct electricity, you'll get it all hooked up and then light bulb won't light up. Okay? Your engineering people are looking at me like I'm crazy, right? All right. So, connected to this computer, might be there we go. Password in. I have a program here which we'll be using in lab today. It just records input from a certain from a probe, from any kind of sensor that can record something. So what I have here is a conductivity probe in this tangle of cords. And that's a very simple device. You see it's hollow on the end there. There are two electrodes on either side of that gap. And if a solution that you dip this into conducts electricity, it will allow electricity to flow between those two contacts. It's just like the picture that you had of the two probes going into a solution. Okay? So it's a conductivity probe. Right now, it records zero, okay? Microsiemens per centimeter or something like that. It's a bizarre unit of conductivity. But it depends not only on the amount of electrolytes, but the distance between the probes. So just for now, though, we'll say that zero means nothing is conducting. I have this just in the air, and air does not conduct electricity very well at all, so it reads zero. Okay. I have some deionized water, which I will pour. I think I already have some. Deionized water in a beaker. Okay. Any predictions as to what will happen when I put this in the deionized water? Nothing should happen. Okay. Well, right now you don't know if I just don't have a probe that doesn't work or anything. We'll see in a second when I put it in something different. Okay. This is what we would expect for deionized water. If water is pure, it should not conduct electricity to any measurable amount. So that just tells us our deionizing systems are working properly. It's just a series of two filters that, a lot like a water softener, that remove ions from the solution. Okay? So, I got some tap water here. Right, we can sort of conclude by logic. If we make a big deal about deionized water not conducting any electricity, if I dip this in there, oh, look at that, 52.8. Okay? And right now you don't know if that's a large value or a small value or something like that. It's not a lot of conductivity, but it does show electricity is conducting through these probes, right, through the contacts of that probe. So that means deionized water has something in it which causes it to conduct electricity. What was the definition we used for things that conduct electricity? Electrolytes. There must be some electrolytes within that solution. So, it's my deionized water. I'm just going to use that one to rinse it off. Okay. Some water. Knowing me, I'll dump this all over the computer. Okay. Deionized water. That's at 4.1, 4.2. It came from the same place. Why do you suppose this shows a tiny little bit of conductivity? Yeah, because what didn't I do when I took it from the tap water to this? Yeah, I didn't rinse. I dunked it in there, but what you'd really want to do is use a Kim wipe, get it all wiped off, all dried, so you're not contaminating it. Okay? But still, that's just like 4. That's not very much. Compared to the 50 that tap water was, and even that wasn't a whole. All right. I have some sodium chloride, some table salt. Any idea what that will do to the conductivity? Yeah. Well, sports beverages are big on their electrolytes. Gatorade has an awful lot of salt in it because if somebody's sweating an awful lot, they need to bring in more salt along with the water, right? So salt is one of the electrolytes in Gatorade. I'll just put a little pinch of it. Yeah. How high can I get it to go? Looks like we might be max about 250, something like that. Come on, just a little bit. So it's going to fluctuate a little bit, but so what does that mean about sodium chloride? Sodium chloride is a electrolyte, okay? Already knew that with Gatorade. I'll rinse most of this off of there. Try to get it as clean as I can. New beaker. Just water. Too full. I'm back down at 4, so I have some sugar. So, sugar, sucrose. Well, salt, made it conduct electricity. Gatorade has a lot of sugar in it, too. What do you think sugar will do? Well, let's see. I'm dumping an awful lot in there. Is it going up to 4? What was sugar? What was salt at? 200? 250? Remember, regular tap water was at like 50 or something like that. Okay? So, is this conducting electricity to an appreciable extent? No. There's something fundamentally different about sugar from salt. Okay? If I were to plug a light bulb up to this, 10.1, 10.0 would not be enough conductivity to even start to light. Okay? So, let's go back to our page. Plug this back into my computer. So, that tells you what's going to happen here. The salt solution, and if I do this right, I can show a light bulb that's lit up. The sugar solution would show what? Light bulb that is not lit up, right? So, let's answer our question here. Deionized water itself, is it an electrolyte or a non-electrolyte? Non-electrolyte. NaCl? Electrolyte. Sugar? Non. Okay? Deionized water is H2O. Here's the formula for sugar. Those two are non-electrolytes, but NaCl is an electrolyte. Okay? What do these two have in common, and what is different from those about NaCl? H2O, CHNO, Na, and Cl?
Ions.
Ah, NaCl is what kind of compound? It is ionic. H2O and C12H22O11, those are not ionic. Those are what? Molecular. Okay. How do you determine the difference just from a formula whether something is ionic or molecular? This one is a metal and a non-metal. Na plus, Cl minus. Okay. Well, you should be able to make a prediction for this last one. C3H6O is acetone. What do you predict? Electrolyte or non?
Non.
Non? Okay. NH4Cl, electrolyte or non-electrolyte?
Electrolyte.
Ooh, that's an electrolyte. There's no metals in that. Oh, it's an ionic compound. What is the positive ion in this? Ammonium. NH4 plus and Cl minus. That should be an electrolyte. Gosh, I can't fool you guys at all. NH4Cl is usually a good one that tricks at least somebody. Okay, I fooled somebody. Yeah, see, there's a reason I had you memorize all those stupid polyatomic atoms, right? You have to be able to recognize them. Yeah, sure. All right. Okay, two beakers. Let's do the non-electrolyte first. Then I don't have to rinse it off. How are we doing on time? We're about done. Put some acetone in here, it's a liquid. Just pour it in there, it should dissolve. Got some ammonium chloride. Just the makeup of these substances should tell you something. Ammonium chloride is a white solid. Okay. Acetone was a liquid. Okay. A little bit of it in there. Okay. Here's one with the acetone. 10, 11, about what the sugar was. Right? Here's the ammonium chloride. 250. Right on where the salt was. Okay? So I think that proves it pretty well, right? That ionic compounds will conduct electricity, whereas molecular compounds, whatever they are when they're dissolved in water, will not. Okay? So that's it for now. Let's meet you over in lab in about 15 minutes.
Anticipating it.